And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
Live from the iHeartRadio podcast stage here on Radio Row in the home of Super Bowl 56, this is Move the Sticks on a Monday. Welcome, everybody. Great to be here with you as we get closer to Super Bowl Sunday. Rhett Lewis, our former NFL scouts, Daniel Jeremiah, Bucky Brooks, and guys, we got a sweet setup here thanks to our friends at iHeart, and I do kind of feel like, though, if I was a recording artist, that this would be like an acoustic session. You know what I mean? Like down at Muscle Shoals, like I'd have my guitar.
Oh, yeah.
Does that feel about right?
This is unique, though, to kind of set the scene here as we sit here in these couches and there's lots of foot traffic coming by.
Yes.
And the world we live in, everybody has masks on, right? So people stop and look at us. And I'm like, do I know
who?
You?
I think I know you.
Do you know us?
Yeah.
Like, what is the connection here? I'm dying to figure it out.
Yeah. I'm with you. But, like, you know, it's great to be back here in this setting, right, to feel the energy of the Super Bowl. It's great to, you know, for all of us out here in Southern California to have a home game for a Super Bowl. You know what I mean?
No doubt. It's kind of a little surreal that it's like the world, what is it, worlds are colliding, Jerry? Like, it's very Seinfeld-esque here to have the Super Bowl and Los Angeles together.
Yeah. Should be a good deal, though. Like, it should be a lot of fun, and we have plenty of time. We'll talk about that later
in
the week on the pod. But, no, it's exciting. Like, this is the epicenter. It's the epicenter of the football world right now.
49ers running back Elijah Mitchell is going to be along here in just a little bit. Again, that's just part of the great thing about Super Bowl week. You got guys running around here all through Radio Row. We'll have great guests all week long, as I will as well on the Inside Report podcast taping.
There it is.
That was your one. That was your one plug.
Shameless plug.
All right. It's also All-Star Game. Well, I should say it's the end of All-Star Game season. Just finished up the Senior Bowl on Saturday, and Bucky and I were at the East-West game. DJ was on the call with Andrew and CD for the Senior Bowl. Bucky was also pulling double duty, DJ, at the NFLPA Collegiate Bowl in Pasadena.
Man of many hats.
With money. Yes, indeed. So that's part of what we want to do here for you today is give you guys our takes on what we saw here over the course of the last 2 weeks. And then look ahead to the draft here a little bit as we now start to have this other element of the draft evaluation pot, you know, that you get to put in there. Bruce Feldman is also going to join us from The Athletic, one of our favorite guests here, kind of state of college football and kind of his insights on some of these guys that we're going to be talking about here. But let's start at the Senior Bowl, DJ. You were there all week. Quarterbacks, obviously, name of the game. Had some impressive performances that I saw. You know, when I got to go down to Mobile and actually see the game in person, Kenny Pickett was perfect in the game, literally 6-6 and a touchdown. But take us back to the whole week for the quarterbacks.
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, first of all, kind of big picture it. I do think the line of scrimmage is the strength of this draft. We'll get some of these pass rushers in a little bit here. I think offense, defensive line is kind of where the higher ranked players are. But the quarterback position, Kenny Pickett entered that week as my top quarterback, as my 18th overall player. First day was fine. Second day, man, guys, we got rain and we got wind. It was nasty outside. And I think a lot of eyes were kind of fixated on him to see how he would do. And he struggled, which is not unusual for any quarterback to struggle on that. I just think there was added eyeballs and added scrutiny on him. Just didn't really control the ball really well, kind of got away from him. And so the cool thing was you have that kind of a little bit of a setback, if you want to call it.
Sure.
He comes back Thursday. Now they're in the indoor facility, which is open air, as you guys know. You've been down there, South Alabama. But so still some wind coming in there, but no rain. And threw the ball really well down in the red zone particularly. Made good decisions. The ball's out quick. All the stuff that you liked about him on tape you saw there. And then that carried over into the game, which not surprised at all. Once you get in the game setting, I know as a quarterback, I always thought it was much easier to throw in a game setting. First of all, you've got live pass rush, so that creates better vision for you to see, distribute the ball accurately. I don't think he had any completion, had a touchdown, 89 yards. So I still come out of the week in its total perspective here with him as the top quarterback. Now, the gap, I think you could say, shortened a little bit, and we'll get to that.
But Malik Willis was the buzziest guy down there, right, based on the entire week?
Based on Wednesday.
So, in the elements.
Absolutely. So whatever harm that did to Kenny Pickett, Buck, it did benefit Malik Willis because in that inclement weather, he can drive the ball. He can power it. He didn't have any trouble cutting through the wind, the rain. He made a nice throw on the move, hit Dulcich, the tight end from UCLA on a deep corner. Showed not only his ability to power the football, but then you could touch it up. So that was the best practice any of the quarterbacks had down there was Malik Willis on a Wednesday. Now, wasn't great on a Tuesday, was solid on a Thursday. And then you get to the game, And look, he was under constant pressure. He was able to use his legs. I think he rushed over 50 yards. I think he was only 2 of 4 throwing the ball. One of them was dropped. So it wasn't a lot to take from him in the game other than the fact that he's very athletic, and you know he can do that.
So here's what I asked you, because the last couple of years when we look at the draft, the guys that have really popped at the next level have been the guys with outstanding tools. We've seen Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson and even Justin Herbert, guys who have their prototypical traits that scouts fall in love with. So now after watching him have that performance on Wednesday, and we talk about the athleticism and the arm talent and those things, do you think he gets a bump up just because he's so toolsy in the evaluation?
I think he does. I really do. I think you just mentioned it perfectly, Buck. Like, if you look at the recent history, those guys with those top traits have hit more than they've missed. You know, it used to be back in the day, you'd say, oh, man, you don't want that guy. He's just – it's fool's gold. You know, I don't want to pick on somebody, but, like, Jacob Eason would be kind of an example of this is just a big, strong, powerful guy. But, you know, he wasn't a great quarterback.
Right.
He wasn't a great quarterback.
Put it all together.
I think the difference is with a guy like Malik, while he's figuring it out, he's going to be able to run around and make plays and make some things happen. That, to me, is the big difference.
And then to put a bow on it, and I think we might have talked about this a little bit, does he feel a little bit like – and this is not a comp player to player, but a comp in terms of draft position, like a Teddy Bridgewater or like a Lamar Jackson, where you could see a team coming back into the back of the first round wanting that extra year of control for a guy like Malik?
I think based off of the player, yes. I think that the player warrants that consideration for being a back end one. I would say, though, as you guys know, somebody falls in love with the person.
That
jumps way up.
Yeah.
Above where the grade is. And you're saying, hey, I'm actually... I'm reading this book on risk right now, and this is a great example of that. You try and say, okay, we're accounting for the risk, but man, when you get to know him really, really well, you believe in the work ethic, you believe that he's smart, you believe that this is all going to come together in time, you believe in your structure that you're going to give him and provide him.
Right.
I think some people are going to look at that risk and say, the juice is worth the squeeze on that one.
Well, in the scouting business, we always talk about you kind of gamble on the person, not the player. If you get the right person in terms of the guy that is committed to it, he loves the game, he has all those things, that is the guy that you will roll the dice on, not necessarily the guy that just brings the attributes to the table.
One thing, though, he said, you know, to me, even on the airplane, I know he's said this to teams as well, that he knows he's not ready right now. He's going to take some time. Good self-awareness, in my opinion, to be able to know that. And I think, though, he's going to be enthusiastic about putting in the work to get there. So I hope it's not a situation where he goes to a terrible team and they just roll him out there.
Yeah.
That'd be the worst thing that could happen to him.
That's a great point. All right, so that's kind of look at the quarterbacks from the Senior Bowl. Out at the East-West game, we had some really interesting prospects because they were big names, right? Power 5 type of guys, mm-hmm. Brock Purdy. We had Jack Cohn. And so, like, you know, names that people who follow college football really know, I mean, really productive players. Cohn in particular, transfer from Wisconsin, kind of lost his job due to an injury and then went to Notre Dame and had a fantastic year. I mean, threw for 500 yards in a bowl game for Notre Dame. And so, Bucky, I imagine you feel the same way. He was the most favorably and positively talked about quarterback from the coaching staffs. As a guy who had command, knew what he was doing, had the experience, knew where to go with the football, timing, on time and accurate.
Yeah, and I think his experience benefited him.
Yes.
We've talked about it. We've had these conversations on and off the air where we talk about the transfer portal and guys bouncing around. He benefited from the fact that he played in two different systems. He got a chance to play in what I would say two different ways. Wisconsin is more traditional pro style, under center, old school 1970s football per se. And then he goes to Notre Dame. He plays in the gun and does some of those other things. In an all-star game setting, that experience put him ahead of everybody else because, look, whatever they asked him to do, he had experience doing, and he did it really, really well. And when you think about what's in his background, the lacrosse background as a high school player, highly decorated, the leadership ability, he has a lot of traits that you like. But you're talking about someone that you're talking about, a developmental player, a guy that you bring in. Maybe in time he develops and gives you more than being a backup. But he was really good in this game. He was really solid.
Yeah, and, you know, I would say, you know, thinking back to last year's draft when the Saints took Ian Book out of Notre Dame.
Yeah.
How would you compare him?
I'd actually be more comfortable taking Jack Cohn. He's a more prototypical NFL quarterback. He's a bigger body. And I don't think you're missing anything because, you know, Ian was a great processor, obviously knew that Notre Dame system very well. I think the same for Jack, and he's probably got a little bit better traits, right? Bigger arm.
I think his skills transfer better to the pro game than Ian Book. Ian Book was a great college player.
Right.
He certainly has made his way into the National Football League. Jack is different, though. He size, arm talent, I would go in his favor. I think Ian was a little more creative in terms of what he did with the ball at Notre Dame. But
so if he's a if he was a fourth rounder,
I think you're in that same conversation.
Maybe you're in that same conversation. Starts.
Can I ask the most important question for you guys about this game? Did you guys behave yourself in Vegas?
I mean, we're so far off the strip. I mean,
we had no choice.
We were so far away.
No choice.
But let me say this, DJ. Like, I don't know if you've ever done a road trip with Rhett. Here's what I'm saying. If we could turn back the clock and go back to our college sales, I would say that I would always vote that Rhett is the one that is taking us. Because let me tell you what my guy does. My guy had reservations lined up every night in Vegas.
Come on.
No. Take care of my team.
Look.
Come on.
Reservations lined up. First day, Rhett goes out early, brings back coffee for everybody before he takes them over.
Wow.
Now I'm looking like, wait a minute, like, I know he's a quarterback in Indiana, but deep down inside, he's really a quarterback.
He's
a wide receiver in Indiana, but he's really a quarterback. He's the lead horse. So
he's a sucker.
Any vacation, I'm going with Rhett. Rhett,
my man, Bucky.
Rhett is the guy. Rhett set it up. It was nice.
Can I tell you guys who was the star of All-Star Game season?
You can, yeah.
It was this guy right here.
Oh, boy.
It was this guy right here.
Oh, yeah.
Dino, what's up?
That is
year 50 in the books.
Pops, Dean Kleinschmidt, 50 years at the Senior Bowl.
I had to double check to make sure the Senior Bowl was actually around for 50 years. It has been. I did confirm.
A lot of folks have listened to you on the pod for years, and they don't necessarily know about your pops. So tell everybody what your dad's done.
So he was a head athletic trainer in the NFL for over 40 years with the Saints, the Washington Commanders, and the Detroit Lions.
So weird.
I had to pause for a second there. So that's where I kind of learned it from, because he was always the guy.
He's always the guy.
I got the reservations for us when we go out when we're on the road trips. You always go. You probably know this from your time in the NFL too, Buck. You go to the equipment manager and you go to the head trainer.
They know everything. They know everybody.
When you need something or anything,
they know everything.
On the road or at home, those are the guys. That's why Archie Manning told Peyton when he went to Tennessee, he was like, no question, when you arrive to Tennessee, your best friends will be the head athletic trainer and the equipment manager. Sure enough, equipment manager and him are still good friends.
Oh, absolutely. Wow. They take care.
So he's been, and then he's been the medical coordinator at the Senior Bowl for 50 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Takes care of DJ whenever he gets the issues.
And to think of that.
Stomach issues at night.
To do 40 years of service after having Rhett. I mean, that's incredible.
It is.
No, he does. This is one of the first years where I haven't had to call his dad.
He's got some sort of random
ailment always hits me at the Senior Bowl. Dino takes care of me. So he got the year off this year. I figure 50th, I'll give you a pass.
That's good. But look, quarterbacks weren't the only name of the game at All-Star season. I think, you know, as we get to the meat of this draft class, it's all about the edge rushers, right? And while we didn't have an Aiden Hutchinson or a Thibodeau down at the Senior Bowl, what were kind of your takeaways from that group being, you know, one of the best in this class?
Yeah, I thought it was a good group of offensive linemen, defensive linemen. I think coming through the week, the defensive linemen got the better of the offensive linemen. So, you know, when you look at Jermaine Johnson from Florida State, who is my 20th player, I think, coming to the process. I know, Buck, you've been high on him as well.
A good player.
He was outstanding. They had a tough time dealing with him. Just the length, the twitch, the explosiveness. He's a little bit tight, but still he won a lot of one-on-ones. Yeah. Then he shut it down at the end of the week, so we didn't see him there. He was excellent. Kingsley Enagbare from South Carolina was somebody who I had a grade that puts him more in like the third round range.
Yeah.
And then he had really a phenomenal week of practice. Didn't do much in the game.
Yeah.
But kind of one of those things where I went back and watched a little bit more. Am I missing something?
Yeah.
And look, he helped himself, no doubt.
Sure.
But I think you got to be careful not getting too carried away with what you see in some of those one-on-ones.
Can I tell you a quick story about Kingsley?
Yeah.
So I left Vegas, Bucky, Friday morning. Went straight to Mobile, and I was checking into the hotel down at the Riverview in Mobile, and this big guy comes in next to me, and he's talking to the other front desk clerk, and he lost his key. And the lady's like, "Hey, you know, I need your ID. He's like, "I don't have it. I don't have anything." And she's like, "Look at it." And then he's like, "Wait a second." Opens up his Panini trading cards. He's like, "Does this work?"
Oh, that's great. fantastic.
That's awesome.
Holds up his chest, awesome. His first trading card.
Thinking like, on your toes there. I
there
love
you go.
That
was right. Smart. See, so put that in the notebook.
That's a plus. But yeah. Boye Mafe from Minnesota.
Big fan of Boye. Great
he
story.
He was one too. Who I hadn't got to the tape yet before we got down there. So he flashes during the week. Then he's hell on wheels at the end of the week. I think it was the Thursday practice. Then he had two sacks in the game. They couldn't block him. So then the next morning, my flight's delayed, so I got time. I want to watch some of these guys that I haven't seen yet. So I watched him, and the tape matched up. Like, to me, I think he's a first-round talent. We'll see if he goes in the first round because it's a really deep group, but it not shocked me at all. And he's going to test like an absolute freak.
Do you know how he got his first college scholarship?
Give it to me.
Track practice. There was a coach working out other players on his high school football team. He couldn't get out of track practice. His track coach wouldn't let him out to go do this workout in front of this coach.
Wow.
And the coach, while he was working out these other players, just kept watching this big dude just fly around the track.
He can roll.
Yeah. So anyway, he's a really cool story.
So, I mean, I go through a bunch more defensive line, but it's a really good group. I think if you need an edge rusher, you're feeling great about that. I think the strength of this draft is probably in that 15 to 45 range because I don't know that there's that much difference between the pass rusher you can get at 35 versus a pass rusher you might take at 8 or 9. I really don't think there's that much difference between those guys.
Bucky, I got an interesting one here for you because let me pull out the old – the old East-West chart
board.
Here.
Sleep with that thing?
Yeah,
the board, he kept it.
So this was interesting because we had Matthew Judon up in the booth with us in the third quarter. Grand Valley State, 21.5 sacks. You remember the Ravens. Were you with the Ravens when?
No, but I've been to Grand Valley State.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, great. And we were talking about sack production, and Bucky's always been talking about how, you know, Ozzy always talks about it translates. No matter what level you get to the quarterback, it translates, right?
Yeah.
How about James Houston from primetime in Jackson State? 16.5 sacks on the FCS level, second in FCS. And he got after the quarterback a little bit during the week of the Shrine Game, too.
Yeah, he did get after it. And the thing about James Houston is funny because he has experience. He's a Florida transfer. So he played off the ball with the Gators. But then you go down to Jackson State, they put his hand in the dirt. He comes off the edge. When I look at him, like the natural comparison that I made, and going all the way back size-wise, he kind of reminded me a little bit of Robert Mathis when he was coming out of Alabama A&M. Mm. Like, this guy has twitch. He has a motor. He just has a knack for doing it. And he doesn't look like the prototypical edge rusher.
He's a little smaller now.
Yeah, so he's smaller. So you have to get past that. But when you let him come off the edge, man, he has a knack for being able to get there. And he was able to kind of be disruptive during the game.
And here's one more for you. Drew Wilkins was an assistant coach on the defensive side with the Ravens. Started, great story also, but he started his career as the video coordinator and is now one of their full-time coaches. Yep. He was the defensive coordinator in the game. And he was talking about this dude from Colorado, Carson Wells, an outside linebacker, who he was like, when I go back to Owings Mills, this is the first guy I'm going to talk about. Yeah. So when the Ravens are on the clock, somewhere on probably maybe day two, but probably day three, watch for Carson Wells, Bucky, who was just kind of one of those guys who fits like what the Ravens want from those outside linebackers. I think they compared him to Tyus Bowser a little bit.
He did compare him to Tyus Bowser, and he said what you always talk about, DJ. He talked about smart, tough, instinctive. He had all of that. And when you watched him in practice, he was a guy that was able to kind of go. Motor was always revved up and going. And you know, when you think about the guys that play for a long time, and we'll see here in the Super Bowl, like Trey Hendrickson and those guys
great
that
point.
Are hard, high motor, they play like they have a chance. And so I'm always looking for those guys to play hard because, and no coach said, man, you want a defense that plays hard? Go get a bunch of players that play hard.
There you go. Tell you what, during this week at the Super Bowl, you always see usually a lot of celebrities kind of floating around in here.
Yeah.
And as an avid HGTV watcher,
there's
a girl who looks exactly like the daughter from the show Good Bones. You've seen the show Good Bones?
Yeah, red hair.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
she's sitting down right now. Anyway, so I was like, is that her? So I haven't listened to anything you guys have said because I thought I had an HGTV celebrity in our midst.
Like, what is DJ?
I didn't notice you were checked out.
What is DJ looking at?
But no, it's not. I think she's just a radio producer.
Okay,
but I did think for a second, we had HGTV royalty just outside the set. So I lost everything that you guys were saying.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it was great.
That's
funny.
So look, we had a great week at the East-West game. I know you did at the Senior Bowl. And so I just think that these games end up being so valuable, if not for the reason, like you were mentioning, you have to sit next to Malik Willis on the plane ride home. You know what I mean?
I was in an elevator with Daniel Falele's grandparents who had just got there from Australia.
Wow.
So, and they're, yeah.
Australian Mobile.
Yeah. They, wow. And they, culture shock. They said they'd had a lot of caffeine with the time change.
I would imagine.
Lots.
And by the way, fried I always wonder about I that. I love Mobile. I've had so many great experiences down there. But I just always think, like, they probably watched movies and Hollywood, and all of a sudden they're like, America, a little, this is different than maybe the America that I thought.
I can get that. And yeah, so look, this is kind of a cool time of year because we can now put all this stuff into our notebooks, right? Yeah. Put it all into the bank. And now when we get to pro days, you know, we start seeing some of these guys, some of these quarterbacks in particular, and we get to the combine, we just get a better feel for the group.
Mina. I believe her name was Mina on the show.
Okay. Yeah,
but that's not her. It's not her.
All right. So there you go. We'll see if we can find some more HGTV celebrities for DJ, the who's who of that network, apparently. But look, we got a lot more coming up here for you on this episode of Move the Sticks. When we come back, Bruce Feldman from The Athletic going to join us, get some talk on the transfer portal and his thoughts on some of these quarterbacks that we saw during All-Star game season. Right after this. From The Athletic, our pal Bruce Feldman, who's here with us. Bruce, welcome to our digs here. What do you think, man? It's pretty nice setup.
It is pretty sweet. I am envious, though. I do not have the pullover.
It's still quarter zip season for sure. Hey, I'm kind of curious, obviously, because like All-Star game season is now kind of in the books. And, you know, Bucky and I did the East-West. DJ was on the call for the Senior Bowl, and we were out at the NFLPA game, too. I mean, in those rosters, it's almost like the guys got together that were picking the rosters and like, all right, let's look at Feldman's freaks and just see how many of these guys we can get on our rosters. But I'm also curious because when I was filling out my spotter charts, I mean, it's like, all right, started here, finished here, started here, finished here. I mean, the transfer portal, we're seeing it all over the place. How difficult, I'm curious, in your work and in your research, is it to keep track of these guys as they make their way through their college careers now?
It is hard because you also hear, oh, I think this guy's really good, but then you know there's some kind of issue. Is it a maturity issue? Is it a real baggage
Why
issue?
Why do you leave, right?
Right. And so I think there's a juggling act there, but I know just before we were talking, there's a guy, like you guys were talking about, Ty Chandler, looked good in your bowl game. And I'm like, oh, yeah, the Tennessee, you know, like I know where he was. I know, you know, like the two running backs that left Tennessee were both really highly thought of. One goes to Oklahoma. One goes to North Carolina.
Right.
And I kind of know what the old staffs think about him. And it's just like, do they reinvent themselves? Are they, you know, because like, I think it can be sincere and genuine necessarily. It's not like, oh, somebody's bad mouthing him. It's just,
sure.
You know, how do they fit in a new system, new teammates? It's, you know, and sometimes they don't even have a spring football to kind of acclimate.
I'm curious if you think there's benefit to that, though. I think about guys that have been in kind of one system and the familiarity there and how great that is for their
Definitely.
Development. But then you get into the NFL and it's like, bam, everything's new. These guys have almost had some experience with that, going from one system to the next, from one city to the next. Are there benefits for these guys, you think, as you get to the NFL, having gone through that?
I think there is. You can see how quickly can they get up to speed on things. I mean, you know, the best linebacker I think I ever saw in college was Patrick Willis, and obviously he was a great NFL player. Patrick Willis had four different position coaches at Ole Miss, right? And so it's not that the systems are, but it's like the teaching and what you're getting is different in the room. And I'm sure, like, if I coached him, he probably still would have been great, you know, in the NFL. But I think there are those guys where it's like, okay, you know, you get different voices. How do you process it? How do you manage it? How do you manage other guys in the room? Because I feel like for a lot of these guys, you're having to not reinvent yourself, but you're kind of having to prove yourself all over again. And I think that's probably a key thing, you know, as it relates to you know, they're out of their comfort zone.
You know, in terms of being out of your comfort zone, when you bounce around, you not only change your normal position coaches, but your strength coach changes and the models. And so on your freaks list, as you're going through it, do you feel like that sometimes can have an impact, or how quickly can the new strength coach discover special talents in the other guy?
By the way, before you answer that, did you know as scouts that we are very aware that every new strength coach that comes in says the previous strength coach didn't know what he was doing, and these guys have never really lifted. We're going to lift now.
Now we're going to lift.
Well, do you remember when like Rich Rod got to Michigan and the old strength coach had been there, I think, with Lloyd Carr forever, and Mike Barwas came in, and Mike Barwas was like a rock star among strength coaches. He'd come from West Virginia, had all these guys power clean and 400 pounds. And not to say he wasn't really good, But I think all of a sudden it's like the old guy didn't know what he was doing. Sure. It was like he was a caveman. And I think that goes on, whereas no matter who gets hired somewhere, if you hire a new defensive coordinator, they make the old guy... You know, the old guy could have been like Jolie Dunn or Rocky Long, but all of a sudden he's the most read and react passive guy.
Because hey, we're going to be aggressive.
The fans don't want to hear that. So that's what you're selling. You're selling hope.
And look, I think, you know, as we get closer and closer to the draft here, you know, back in Las Vegas at the end of April, you know, the quarterbacks are always going to be a discussion point for one reason or another. Last year it was, you know, these guys are elite, right? We've got, you know, franchise changing quarterbacks. We've got, you know, premier players, and Trevor Lawrence and Zach and Trey and the whole thing. This year it feels a little different, right? The narrative is all right, maybe the value of the quarterbacks isn't necessarily up at the top. Maybe it's a little bit more to the middle of the first round. How have you kind of, as you've been studying these guys throughout their college careers, how have you kind of noticed the narratives on these guys?
You know, to me, there's a couple of like headliner guys, and I don't think they're, you know, if they were in the last class, I'm not sure they would have been top 20 guys, right? I mean, because... You had Kenny Pickett, who I think, I feel like he would be the guy who, I don't want to say he doesn't have a high ceiling, but I think his floor is probably higher than a lot of others. Whereas, you know, you take Malik from Liberty, I mean, he's got a ridiculous arm. You in your game, right, I get it what's going on during the week, but in your game, he is extending plays and doing stuff where you talk to the guys at Liberty, you talk to, you know, they played, he was in your old conference, right? Yep. And there's some good players in that league, and he's running circles around guys, right? And he beat some ACC teams, too. And I could see people looking at that going, man, you know, if we just give him more time, because everything I had heard from the Liberty staff about his attitude was really good, and I think you just don't want him to have to, in his case, I don't think you want him to have to play right away.
Yeah.
You know, but then after that, I'm not sure, you know, Sam Howell, we got a lot of buzz. I'd be careful where I'm sitting on the couch here because I know where he went to school. but I don't know. I'm like, I don't feel like this is the last group where you had guys, you're like, oh, I could see this guy.
Generational talents.
Yeah,
right?
I don't know. I mean,
they're like, going to elevate. They always do, right?
Well, interesting thing, we're talking about Willis. I sat next to Willis on the flight. I love it when things like this happen. So we end up parked next to each other on the flight from Mobile to Atlanta. And he's very open about the fact, hey, you know, I'm not ready to start right now. I'm going to need some time. There's a lot of self-awareness there, knowing where he wants to go. But the kids, I think he likes the work. He enjoys the work. The tools are there. And Buck and I were talking about this before we came on. When you kind of look at the, you know, the Josh Allens, the Mahomes, the Herberts. Now, those guys were further advanced than he was in college. But some of the same things in that you're buying the traits and you're buying the person and knowing that eventually they're going to get there. Now, Herbert got there immediately. Mahomes obviously waited a year. Josh was maybe a 2 or 3 year process to get where he is now. But I think teams are in on these types of guys with those types of traits.
Yeah, and I think it was about a year ago at this time, I was talking to an NFL coach, and he was like, they looked at, well, you better take a quarterback now. I think it was when Mac Jones was like, where does Mac Jones fit? And it's like, this is not going to be a good quarterback draft coming up. And I remembered this guy said, the Liberty guy is really interesting. And I was like, I knew about him, but I didn't know what anyone thought about him. I knew he had a big arm, and that was the extent of it. And then I remember I talked to Quincy Avery, who had been coaching him for a while, and he had, you know, a kid who he trained with in the past year who was in the last draft who had a huge arm. And he was like, this kid has an even better arm than Trey, or an even bigger arm than Trey Lance, I should say it that way. But you start to hear more stuff about the attitude and everything else, and it's very favorable. Like, he would talk about when he was at Auburn and they didn't think he could play quarterback. You know, he was like, I don't know if he felt like he knew how to work the way he needed to. And I don't think it was an attitude like he was immature. I just think he was like, just didn't know
what he didn't know.
You know, so the other thing that jumped out at me just on, so they had the Elite 11 in the opening in Manhattan Beach. And I remember coming over there and you looked and he was one of the counselors. And I don't know what he weighed then. He might have been 235. And it was not like a sloppy,
Oh, he's built like a linebacker. Yes.
He's built like a linebacker, and the linebacker might be Takeo Spike's linebacker. Right? Like, he is a huge, muscled up guy. Like, I saw he got down to 220.
Yeah.
Like,
he did
and
look
I'm not
slimmer.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I think at one point you said in the broadcast, or maybe Charles did, about like the little bit of the comparison to Kyler.
Yeah.
And
the speeds were almost identical.
But Kyler, I think, has worked to get up to what is he, 212 or whatever he is now. Like, I think he's going to have to, and I'm not saying he's going to balloon up to 240, but he looks like he could easily be 235, because I remember seeing him in the summer and he was a jacked up 235. Like, he's not a small man.
You know, after watching Joe Burrow have so much success, there are people that are looking for that Joe Burrow like player. And the guy whose name continues to come up is Kenny Pickett from Pittsburgh. From a temperament standpoint, are there some similarities in terms of the way that those guys get down?
The thing I would give maybe is, I think, I hate to use this term, deceptively athletic. But like, Joe Burrow is a way better athlete, I always thought, than people gave him credit for.
Yeah.
You know, like, the, you know, we could talk about, if you're a really good basketball player,
yeah,
I feel like, I'm not sure I'm worried what you're going to run the 40 in. If, like, you're a really good basketball player, you're a space guy, right? Like,
you saw it in the game with Chris Jones barreling down on him, just to be able to step out of that.
Yeah, like, we had something on – I'm trying to remember who I talked to. This was a coach getting ready for the national title game. He was talking about what gives Saban problems, and he kind of went through – you know, obviously Johnny Manziel did, and a handful – you know, Deshaun Watson did – and he, I think this coach was like, well, Joe Burrow is really the only one who wasn't really athletic or whatever. And like said that, Joe Burrow ran for like 75 yards against that game. Like,
dang good.
He can go. And so I think Kenny Pickett's, obviously you saw it on the fakes, you know, the fake slide. I would, like, to me, Joe Burrow's intangibles are like off the charts. And I know Narduzzi really well, and I know Narduzzi thinks really highly of him. I would be hesitant to put him in that.
I don't know
class.
That Kenny is as edgy as Joe.
I don't know if anybody's as edgy as Joe.
That's true. That's true. That's a great point. But I think he still brings people together like Joe does. I think Kenny's got that ability with him. And I'm really excited to get to know him a little bit more these next couple of months as we get closer to the draft. Still got a few head coaching openings in the NFL, but it sounds like Jim Harbaugh is not going to get one of them here. Bruce, I know you've been on the trail, the little cookie trail that he's been leading the last few weeks to get
there
back to
chicken
the
bones on that trail.
are we done with this now? Is this the last time we're going to talk about Jim Harbaugh to the NFL?
The way he spoke about it this weekend, you would think it has to be.
Yeah.
But you never say never with football coaches. They can't help themselves. The part that I think, you know, he's 58, and I'd always heard he wants to make one last run at a Super Bowl. Now, that could be 3 years from now. You know, I mean,
sure.
he seems like he's a young 58, but if he couldn't get one of these jobs now, I'm not sure what, like, Jim Harbaugh is going to be Jim Harbaugh's personality, which is a very acquired taste.
Yeah.
And I don't know. You had the Raiders job with an mm-hmm. owner who knew him well at a place he had some affinity. You had the Vikings with a new GM who knew him well. I don't know.
Chicago, where he played.
Yeah, I don't know what the dynamic is going to have to be where, you know, the Dolphins owner is a big Michigan guy. Now, he said he didn't want to go that route, but I was like, I don't know what scenario would lure him away from it. And also, you know, he's going to have to have a top 10 team for him to have like buzz around his name.
Yeah.
You know, I get it. Jim Harbaugh was a terrific NFL coach. He is not one of these guys like Urban went in there and was a spectacular flame out.
Yeah.
But Urban had never been around the NFL. Obviously, Jim played there a long time. He coached in as an assistant. And then he had, you know, a terrific run in 4 years with the Niners. I just don't know if anyone's going to look and say, yeah, we want that guy to run our franchise.
My takeaway on that was, it's not that he won't go to the NFL. It's that he'll never do a public interview or anybody will. Nobody will fight. If he goes to the NFL, it's going to be, whoa, Jim Harbaugh just went to the NFL. No interview.
Yeah.
Like, that's going to be done in the cloak of darkness. There's no way he can go through this whole thing and then and put the toothpaste back in the tube at Michigan.
Can
that
Jim Harbaugh
round.
Do anything discreetly, though?
I don't know. Up in a treehouse, maybe, with a recruit.
That's
I don't know how he does anything discreetly,
that's
but that's
him.
A good point.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I would never say never. But, like, also the way he worded it, I just think circumstance is going to make it really hard for it to be better than this was.
So now he goes back to Michigan, but he doesn't have his offensive coordinator and he doesn't have his defensive coordinator. How can he sustain it?
It's a good question because I think the toothpaste is all over the sink right now and the counter, because I think there was I don't think it was just Josh Gattis who was a little irked about how this played out, and I don't think it was just Jim Harbaugh. I think it was how Jim Harbaugh kind of put a lot of people at Michigan kind of in limbo. You know, they're not active in the transfer portal. You had coaches whose contracts were just kind of they were in limbo, because everybody, at least most of the people I know who I talked to who are at Michigan, thought Jim was going to leave. And if that was the case, then they were going to probably bring in a new head coach. Now, I don't know who that would have been. Could have been Matt Rhule, could have been Matt Campbell, could have been whoever. But the idea was, we're not going to sign a bunch of guys on the staff to contracts, and then all of a sudden a new guy is going to come in and go yeah, I'm not taking that job because I want my own guys in here. And so that put a really weird situation there. We'll see who he goes and gets on. I think it's more likely, whoever he gets on the defensive side of the ball, maybe out of house. I could see he has a couple of really good candidates internally. The O-line coach, Sharon Moore, did a really good job. I mean, they won the Joe Moore Award. They could promote him. Matt Weiss, who was a quarterback coach who had coached on both sides of the ball with the Ravens for his brother, he was a guy I heard Jim was going to bring with him to the NFL. So I could see that being an opportunity.
I'll tell you what, the one thing about Harbaugh, though, he can lose coaches. He can be at this place. The guy wins. He's going to continue to win. I'm not going to doubt that's going to happen.
I was going to say, even if the coordinator stayed, it's still going to be tough to compete with Ryan Day and Ohio State year in and year out.
They're not.
And
but they just need to do it once every 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, it can't be
once every eight.
Exactly.
Do it once every 3, you're okay. Do it once every 8.
Last question for me, Bruce. Let's go 5 years from now. You had to put your money on one player from this draft class that'll at least be to one Pro Bowl. Who would you pick?
At least be to one? Stingley Jr. is going to be, unless he has injuries. I was around them when he was a true freshman, and he went up against Jamar Chase every day at practice. I don't want to say he won more than he lost, but
he won more than he lost?
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, there's a really good cornerback from Clemson who was done well in the NFL, who could not handle Jamar Chase.
I believe his name was A.J. Terrell.
Yeah, he's done really well. Yeah. And I bet if you asked Jamar Chase who is the better cornerback who you went up against, I don't even think he'd hesitate.
Stingley.
Yeah. So
how do you explain the last 2 years, Bruce?
I think some of it was health issues. Right before the opener in 2020, he had, I don't want to say it was appendicitis. It was something, it was not COVID-related. I think he had to go to the hospital the morning of the game. And I think from everywhere, it was kind of just off kilter. The system was screwy. They were really bad in the back end on communication. And then this past year, even when he played, though, it was weird because they have, as you know, and you guys have been around Eli Ricks, they had a couple of, NFL looking first round guys. And the guy who might have been their most productive cornerback was Dwight McLaughlin, who ended up going, he's really talented too, but ended up going to Arkansas. And so I just think it was a lot of stuff going on there that made it messy. But I think there'll be other guys who go to Pro Bowls, but I'd be shocked if he's not going to more than one.
That's why Bruce is the best. Strong take.
Yep. Nope, no question. Bruce Feldman, always one of our favorites here on Move the Sticks. Bruce, thanks for spending some time with us here.
Good seeing you guys.
Yeah, we'll get you a pullover.
Yeah, we'll get you a quarter zip. Don't worry.
We'll hook you up.
All right, back here with you on Move the Sticks live from our iHeartRadio podcast stage here on Radio Row, home of Super Bowl 56 here in Los Angeles. Rhett Lewis, Daniel Jeremiah, Bucky Brooks, and our pleasure now to welcome in just finished his rookie year from the San Francisco 49ers out of the University of Louisiana, sixth-round draft pick that went for over 1,000 total yards in year one. Elijah Mitchell is here with us. What's up, brother? How are you, man?
Man, welcome. I'm good, man. Thank y'all for having me.
DJ was just talking about it. We just wrapped up Senior Bowl. It's been basically about a year, year removed from seeing you now. And here you are, at the Super Bowl coming off your rookie year. I mean, how do you kind of explain this kind of whirlwind that this first year has been for you?
Yeah, it's definitely been a ride. Like I say, Senior Bowl was last year.
Yeah.
It goes by so quick, so quick.
Tell me about this run for this team this year. I know you guys had some adversity that you battled through, and man, darn near made your way to this game right here. But what did you learn about not only yourself, but about your team through this year?
It's a brotherhood with our team. That's one thing I have to say. Like I say, we went 3-5, and then we made it to the NFC Championship. So, man, that tells you that we have unbelievable talent on our team and we could go far.
You know, one of the things that stands out when you watch the Niners, particularly on the offense, how physical you guys are. Is there a memo that is in your locker room, in the locker room when you get in there, that you have to play a certain way to be a 49er?
Not really, but when they draft you, they know what they're getting from everybody, anybody, and that's the offense that we have. It's just physical.
So, Elijah, a lot of talk when you were taken in the sixth round about a certain other Hall of Fame running back that was taken in the sixth round by Kyle Shanahan's dad, our buddy, used to work with us here at NFL Media, Terrell Davis. Like, how much did you know about, like, the Shanahan system, like the run game system, when they drafted you, and like thinking, like, all right, like, this might be a good spot for me?
He,
like,
wants to know if you have outside zone tattooed on your arm.
To be honest with you, I really didn't know about their offense at first, but once me and my agent talked and everything, I was like, man, we got the same kind of offense that I ran with Coach Billy Napier. So outside zone, inside zone. So that was a perfect fit for me.
Now did you think, you know, once training camp started, that you were going to be in a position like this?
I did not know at all. My mom was on special teams, really, because I knew we had a deep room.
Yeah.
We had Raheem, Jeff, just drafted Trey Sermon.
Yeah.
So special teams was my thing, but I didn't think it happened now. I know that now. Anything. So you got to prepare. Like, you're going to be in the game.
Exactly.
Well, I know you can roll. Obviously, you end up running the 4.3, so you can absolutely fly. But one of the things I loved about you as a runner is just how decisive you were. And it seems like that's long been a characteristic of backs in this system, is there's no hesitation. You see it, get your foot in the ground, get upfield, and go. How did your style, you talked about being in a similar offense, how did your style fit in right away with what they do?
It's fitting very good. One-cut guy. I'm a one-cut guy. And Kyle loves it because I'm always falling forward. And really, he liked that. He don't like all that dancing. He like you getting straight up the field. So it worked out very well.
So how fun is it for you guys when you have those install meetings on Wednesday? Because when on the outside, we see you guys doing all the stuff, the shift, the motions, anybody and everybody's in the backfield. How fun is it to open up the playbook on Wednesday and see the new stuff that Kyle is putting in?
Man, it's awesome. Like, we run outside zone or something, you like, okay, yeah, that's going to cut back. Like, you can see it. Like,
you see it.
Like, we talk soon as we see it, me and Hasty, we'd be like, oh, yeah, that's going to hit right there. Like, we're watching film and stuff, so we'd be excited about it. Very excited.
So, go ahead.
I was going to say, just real quick, like, is Debo an honorary running back, or is he a full-fledged member of the running back crew now?
To me, he's a full. He full to me.
He's got full membership? Yeah,
full membership.
Oh, yeah, he's a beast. Oh, yeah, he's a beast. So, I don't mind it at all.
Let's just say he was, you know, on another team that maybe didn't have the established group of running backs that you guys now have, and let's say he was the lead dog. Is he a 1,000-yard rusher?
Oh, my gosh.
Every year?
No doubt. No doubt. He's a 1,000-yard
rusher. He might be arguing for another grand on top of the 1,000.
That's right. Might be a 2K.
No doubt.
You know, so coming off the heels of a strong rookie season, what would be some of the things that you would want to improve upon going into your second year?
Definitely making people miss an open field. I got to do that more. And also this offseason, I'm going to be training like a receiver because I know Kyle would like to throw the ball, so I want to be the guy that stays on the field.
Yeah, I like that.
That adds a whole other dimension to that offense once you get to that point. I want to ask you about somebody that's on the other side of the ball for you guys, because we're going through the draft season right now. Teams are trying to find – we're trying to find rangy, long, athletic, off-the-ball linebackers. You get to see one of the best in the league in Fred Warner. What type of a challenge is that when you have somebody with that combination of length and speed that he brings?
Really, going against him makes you better, really, because, you know, he's a all-pro Fred, highest-paid linebacker. So going against him, it makes you better, and it makes you in your head like, man, if I could do this against Fred, I could do this against anybody. So it gives you that good feeling.
Well, you know, in those meetings that Bucky was talking about, you know, you could see Mike McDaniel a whole bunch, right? And now, you know, the Dolphins have named him their head coach. Talk to us about Mike and kind of the leadership that he possesses to not only just command an offense, but how you can see him commanding an entire team, which he's now charged with in Miami.
Yeah, man, he's definitely capable of doing it. He's awesome. His creativity, just how he's flow. He's very chill, but he's about his business. So, they getting an unbelievable coach. And, man, it's going to be interesting to see.
Is he like that all the time? Like, when he goes out to press conferences and stuff, he's got so much life and so much energy. Yeah. Is he like that behind the scenes?
He's like that behind the scenes, too. But he's corny, but it's funny. He's funny, though, man. He's a good person to be around, definitely.
I have to ask you this, because you have so many guys that learn so many different spots. We already talked about Debo and George Kittle bouncing around, Kyle Juszczyk. Is it a hard offense to learn and master? Like, how are you able to move the pieces around the chessboard, but everyone appears to be on the same page?
It's definitely difficult, but it's difficult for defenses also.
Yeah.
But you just have to be locked into your plays. You got to know, because everything happens so fast. So it was a big challenge for me at first, but I had help with the guys in the room. We all brothers in there, and it's no hate, no nothing. So we all help each other out.
I want to kind of finish my last question up on that word hate you just mentioned. We've got the Rams in the Super Bowl. Mm. You've only been there for a year, right? But is there a hatred now? Have you got the hatred for the Rams or anybody else in your division?
I got to say, it's for the Rams.
Yeah.
It's definitely for the Rams, man. But, you know, it sucks. But, you know, next year, it's just add most fuel to the
fire. What do you guys need to do to get on the other side of that? You guys have had their number, you know, before this last game. What needs to change for the next time you see them to get where you need to be?
Really, it's execution, really. You can't say it's the plays or anything, because Kyle and Mike McDaniel, they put us in a good position.
Yeah.
It's just, you got to execute more.
So Bengals then this week, or where are we leaning?
I'm going with the Bengals.
that's more of a want-to pick, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, no doubt. I said it was my last one. I lied. One more. Trey Lance.
Yeah.
We didn't get a chance to see him on the practice field. You did. So I'm just curious what you saw from him at the beginning of the year. I know he had to battle an injury, but what you saw, his advancement kind of outside the public eye, what you got to see on a weekly basis, where he's at.
From the beginning to rookie camp to now, he's grown as a player. And yeah. Like I say, his offseason is going to be great. I know he's a hard worker, and it's going to be awesome for us next year.
There he is, Elijah Mitchell, running back with the San Francisco 49ers. I imagine we're going to see you back here on this stage, but not necessarily on this one, on the one that the Rams and Bengals are getting
Sounds
set to play
me.
On, man.
Definitely.
No question. Definitely. All right, Elijah, thanks for being here with us on Move the Sticks.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks, man.
And that's going to do it for this episode of Move the Sticks here live from our iHeartRadio podcast stage on Radio Row. Back with you later this week as we preview Super Bowl 56.